Now we are going to talk about descriptive analytics, and later we will also talk about descriptive statistics. So understand, when we talk descriptive, has to specifically do with the past data. We use descriptive analytics to basically understand how the past data worked, and only then can we understand how it will impact the future. So the most basic and simplest form of analytics provide hindsight information to on what happened in the past and what is happening now. By organizing data into meaningful smaller nuggets, summarize results to help a business learn from past business activity, how the future is likely to be impacted, and the course correction required using data aggregation. So basically, when I talk about descriptive analytics, what do I say? That I will now, based on my past data, I will make smaller nuggets of the data, maybe time-wise, maybe category-wise, or different, and then summarize and learn how the past activities were working. Only when I understand the past will I understand what is the future course of action that is required by aggregating data or adding in more data to my data and or multiplying it with multiple sources. Statistical packages and Excel are used for this kind of analysis. You can very well do this either in a statistical package like anything. It could be any of your statistical tools like IBM, SPSS. It could be Python. It could be Tableau, Power BI, and or even you could use Excel. Preferably something that can run more statistics, but most of the tools now can run at least basic descriptive statistics. Where can I apply descriptive statistics? Summarizing past events, that is territorial customer addition or retention, sales, success or marketing campaign, tabulating all your social media metrics such as Facebook, like tweets, reach, engagement, followers. Descriptive analytics outcomes are used for administrative reporting functions such as sales, marketing outcomes, financial data, operation performance, milestone delivery tracking. Investment advisors and brokers use it to analyze their investment in order to improve future performance. So very simple applications of all your descriptive analytics. Now let's talk about a more important point, which is descriptive statistics. So when I talk about descriptive statistics, and we have been speaking about this, we talk about mean, median, and mode. So the descriptive statistics consists of three basic categories of measures of central tendency, measures for variability or spread, and frequency of distribution. So when I talk about measures of central tendency, I talk about mean. Measures of variability or spread, I talk about median. And when I talk about frequency distribution, I talk about mode. So now let us look at all these three descriptive specific statistics in detail. So what is mean? We all know, the average of a data set. What is median? It is the value that is exactly in the middle of an ordered distribution. If there are an even number of data points, the median will be the average of the two data points in the middle of the distribution. So mean, I don't need to have an ordered data set, or I can just use the data set as it is. But when I talk about median, then it becomes very important that I arrange the data in an ordered manner. That means I basically go from low to high. And there where I have the midpoint of my data is where I will see the middle of the distribution or the median that is there. And very correctly, if it's an odd number, then I definitely know what is the specific median value. But if it is a even number, then it has to be the average of those two numbers and middle of those two numbers. Mode. Now, mode is very interesting. Mode is the most frequently occurring value in a set of scores that are ordered. It is a measure of central tendency that tells you the most popular choice of both characteristics of your example. A data can be unimodal, bimodal, trimodal, or multimodal. That means I have more than one tendency which has the higher set of scores. So again, what do I mean by that? That in this case, what I will order is I will order the frequency and not the values in median. I order the values and not the frequency in mode. I specifically order the frequency to get the highest number at the top, and that is my mode value. So if you can see over here, now what I've done is I have an indication where I have bachelor's degree, master's degree, IITI diploma, bachelor's degree, doctoral degree, and master's degree. Now, when I check out the frequency, the bachelor's degree has 2 and master's degree has 1. So this becomes a bimodal data where I say modals are bachelor's degree and master's degree that is there. And this is categorical data. So in such a data set, I can use mode. So in levels of measurement, this is also very important for us to how the various levels of measurement work. So there are 4: nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio, and together they are called NOIR, N-O-I-R, which is nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio. And we will understand how all these 4 work together. So the levels of measurement of the variables determines when you should use the mode. Levels of measurement are also called as scales of measurement and inform the preciseness of the variable's record. A variable is anything that can take on different values across your data set. So 4 that are there. So every variable that I have in my data set will fall under one of these categories, or it can fall under continuous, which is a different category altogether. But in general, across these 3 categories, all your categorical data has to fall in one of these. Nominal, that can only be categorized. Ordinal can be categorized and ranked. So this that you saw is an example of a nominal data set. When I have ordinal, that means I can basically a ranking scale, a rating scale would be ordinal. Interval is categorized, ranked, and evenly spaced. So groups. Ratio, the data can be categorized, ranked, evenly spaced, and have a natural zero. And as a natural zero. So we'll look at that. So now what will be categorized as nominal? You can categorize by leaving them mutually exclusive, but there is no order between the categories. So anything that comes without an order will come under nominal, which is gender, city of birth, ethnicity, car brand, marital status. I cannot order any of these. So when I can't order them, they all come under the nominal category. In ordinal, if you remember, we said categorize and that we can rank your values. So categorized and ranked. So when I say ordinal, you can categorize and rank your data in order, but you cannot say anything about the intervals between the ranking. Although you can rank the top 5 million, your scale does not tell you how close or how far in there in the number of wins. So I have top 5 medical, language ability, beginner, intermediate, fluent. We see this all in our resumes. Rating said very satisfied to, very dissatisfied to, very satisfied. Unless I have a rating scale like 1 or 5 is very dissatisfied and 1 is very dissatisfied to 5 is very satisfied, then it becomes a interval rating where I can clearly define the difference. So then I have interval, you can categorize rank and between neighboring data points, that is no true 0 point. So I have test scores, IQ exams. The difference between any two adjacent temperature is the same, 1 degree. But 0 degrees is defined differently on the scale. It doesn't mean an absolute absence of temperature. The same is true for test scores, personality inventory. 0 on a test is arbitrary. It does not mean that a test taker has an absolute lack of the trait being measured. So you have test scores, personality inventories, temperature in degrees or Fahrenheit, that all come under the interval category, where I can clearly define the intervals and know the difference between intervals at any given point of time. You can categorize, so ratios and infer equal intervals between the neighboring data, and there is a true 0 point. Assuming there is an absence of the variable of interest in ratio scale, 0 means an absolute lack of the variable. For example, a Kelvin temperature scale, there is no negative degrees of temperature. 0 means an absolute lack of thermal energy. Now please understand that temperature in Fahrenheit or Celsius, which has negative values, is very different from thermal energy, which is in Kelvin, which has an absolute 0 and has no negative values. That's the reason a Fahrenheit or Celsius comes under the interval category, while the Kelvin comes under the ratio category. So you have height, age, weight, all the metrics that can be measured will come under the ratio level category. Okay, so that was an example of understanding descriptive analytics and descriptive statistics and understanding how the various nominal, ordinal, interval and ratio levels work. Now let's go on to data wrangling. We have done most of data wrangling, where it is also called as data cleaning, data restructuring, and there are multiple names that are given to data wrangling. So first, let us talk about discovery. So the first step we talk about is, where is the data? How is it kept? In what format is the data? This essentially applies for big data or data, raw data, which comes in multiple formats and multiple varieties that is there. So where is exactly your data is what we call as data discovery. Then it comes to structuring. You will ask me, why are we talking about structuring? Because if I'm doing analysis, then there is a structured data. No. Please understand that today, because of the amount of data we pull and the kind of, so if you've seen, we have been talking about image processing, we've been talking about text processing during the course of this chapter. Now, when I'm trying to retrieve all this data, how exactly is this data working? Where exactly is the format of the data? Is it all going to be in the same format? No, it is not going to be in the same format. So other than bringing it in the same format, which will be normalization, which will part of your data cleaning, I also need to give my data structure, a specific structure, so that I can analyze it. Because understand, for analysis, it is very important that my data is normalized and has a structure to it. That means if today I give you a form, or I give you the details of all the employees in your organization, or maybe all the employees, all the students that are there in our organization, and I said give you a physical form with this information, tell you to provide analysis as to how have people rated, what are the kind of students I'm getting, are those students over a period of time, are those students from specific backgrounds, do I want to target these particular communities that are coming in. Now, the first thing to be able to analyze this physical form, what I will need to do is, I will need to first enter that data into the computer system. So probably let me just take a random example where I enter the data in Excel. When I'm entering the data in Excel, the first thing I'll do is give headers to my data. That this is the serial number, this is, or the enrollment number, employee number, the name, first name, last name. So all the categories that, or all the fields that will be there on my physical form, will need to be entered into the Excel data as headers. And then in those headers, I would enter the relevant information. So this is what I'm doing. I'm giving the data, raw data, a structure. Then we come to data cleaning. We've spoken about data cleaning. We've understood the techniques. We've spoken about outliers. We've spoken about missing values. We have spoken about data that is just not correct, flatliners, and all of those, and how to handle all those inconsistencies in the data. Then we now talk about enriching the data. I have been using this term very frequently. So when it comes, what do I mean exactly by enriching the data? That means, now suppose, let's assume a scenario where I have maybe a telecommunications data, where the data talks about all the customer information, how many calls he has made, and all that information, what is the plan they are on, what is the amount of international calls, domestic calls, messages, what data, everything is there in that sheet. But along with that, now I can put in information as to what handsets the customer has. The entire information, I can put in the plan information that the customer has, that what is he entitled to, is he using over the budget, he or she using over the budget, inside the budget. I will also have information about maybe the customer's personal information. Now when I add all this data in, what am I doing? I'm adding more value to the data that is there, or I am now enriching the data that I have for the customer. What does that mean is, Now I've got additional information about the customer, and this could probably add more value to my data. After doing all this, I still need to go back and again validate everything about my data. Is the data right? Are there any specific patterns in the data? And all of those, and build my analytical tools and visualizations, and finally use reports and dashboard, and that's where we come into publishing of the data. So the entire procedure, right from finding the data to publishing a report, is called as data wrangling, which I said is a lot of different terms that we use, and data cleaning is one of those terms that is used with data wrangling. Now, so let's come to the final part where we talk about the various visualization techniques. So this is a pie chart which shows me the distribution of a certain area or a certain item and the market share that it holds. So something that has to do with market share, I will probably use a pie chart. I'm sure we've all used this very frequent. Then we have the bar chart. Bar chart is basically right here you see basically revenue across the quarter, revenue across the month. So you have a defined X and Y axis. You have two fields, one as part of the X axis, one part of the Y axis. And when you basically visualize this data against each other, that's when you use a bar graph. So I can change my X and Y axis. I have control over it. But compare that to the next, which is a histogram. Basically, that tells me anything that has to do with a time series data, I will probably use a histogram. So slightly different from a bar chart because I would specifically can only use a time series data to present a histogram. So we spoke about the histogram. Now we'll speak about the launch timeline. So basically, very simple graph. It's basically a waterfall graph that basically tells me in which or when am I going to achieve each of the milestones in a project, or specifically in a project where I say week one launch, week two launch, how is it going? So if I have to talk about a movie timeline, I would decide when does it go in particular country internationally, when do I put it on OTT platform, and these are things that you could put in there. Then you have heat maps where you just show the distribution with variations in color, so everything with a similar distribution would have a similar color. Then you have a Boskin whisker plot. Basically, the Boskin whisker plot talks about, it's also called the five measures because you have the minimum, the maximum. I'm hoping that's how the scale goes. And then you have a line from a box drawn from the first quartile to the third quartile that is there. So from 25% to 75%. And then this line that you see in the middle, it basically indicates your mean value that is there. So that's the reason it is also called as the five measures table. Then you have a highlight table where basically again for identifying patterns in the data, you can customize the colors and all, but this is how you can, based on your requirement, highlight the pattern. So anything that has to do with certain kind of pattern, you would want to use a highlight table. Then you have the bullet graph. Now the logic of a bullet graph is, firstly, these three colors that you see could be poor, fair, good. How would you define? Basically, this black line that you see is what is the value, and the vertical line that you see is your target. So basically, you would use this when you may want to measure out whether you've crossed the your metrics that have been set, have not crossed the metrics that have been set, and where exactly are you? Are you in the poor category, the fair category, or the good category, and all of this. So this distance indicates where the benchmark or the metrics has not been met. Then you have a chloroplast map, which is basically everything with a similar value would have the same color. So ideally, this is where you would see a chloroplast map when we are talking about terrains and also people, mountains and rivers. You would see valleys, you would see the chloroplast map very clearly used. Then you have the association mapping, or how you see the how each one of these nodes is linked to the other, or how does it work. So those are some of the graphs. There are many more graphs that are there in all the visualization tools that are available. So what are emerging data sets in marketing? review and recommendations. So where do you get them from? Google Hotspot, CitySearch, TripAdvisor, Yelp, AngelList, Busy. So this would all give you recommendations that are there. So I can use this for text analytics, content sites, SlideShare, Metafair, Metacafe, Flickr, Picasso, YouTube, Vimco, Wikipedia, are where you would get content, different types of content, obviously. Social networks, Facebook, Twitter, Zevens, TwitPic, Nick, WhatsApp, Line, LinkedIn. Now we have our Snapchat and all of those also added to the entire list that you have. Search engines are Google, AOL, Ask, Yahoo, and Bing. Blobbing are Tumblr, Google Hotspot, TypePad, Blogger, WordPress, etc. Location-based services, ShopPick, Square, Foursquare, Busy, Guala, Just Dial, Directory, Magic Hello, Google Places, Glocal.com, Superpages.com, Yellow Pages, Yahoo Yokel, YP.com, etc. And Just Dial. Social commerce, Groupon, Irving Social, Ipit, Buy With Me, DLawn, Zomato, Zagat. So these are all now things that had stored data, and I can now use these data sets for developing my various marketing techniques, strategies, or even perform my marketing analytics. Impact of technology and big data, customer segmentation, targeting that we spoke about. So I can now group customers into specific segments and target them, provide real-time analytics, improve customer experience, predictive analytics, smart rate attribution as to how much is my space in the market, data-driven decision making, adoption of web analytics, integration of multiple data sources, integration of AI, ethical consideration, and privacy. This is one of the key points. We've spoken about the rest. When it comes to ethical considerations and privacy, please understand that a lot of this is talking about PII or personally identifiable information or even sensitive data, where we talk about data that is relevant to the organization and that can be used to hamper the organization. So when we talk about most of these content sites, like social networks, social commerce, would all have PII. So even using these data in marketing analytics, you are into ethical consideration that need to be kept, data privacy rules that need to be followed, and all of that needs to be kept under check. You can't just randomly use this data. Okay, so now we've spoken so much about data. Now let's understand what are the different types of data. So under the different types of data, I have first party data, second party data, third party, and zero party data. So first party data is data is collected directly from a company's customer, website customer, mobile app users. It is the most valuable data because the information about the targeted audience behavior, their likes, dislikes, feeling are directly received by the organization. It is collected and owned exclusively by the company that gathers it. So when you fill up the online feedback forms, or basically when you're basically logging into a website, your e-commerce websites today that take personalization information, all these are example of first party data where you give your details and the company actual organization is receiving the details from the website and collecting and owning the data exclusively. So that is the most direct source of and most important data because that is come directly from the customer and there are no intermediate parties to it. Then you have second party data. The first party data shared by another organization, that is shared by organizations about its customers, is usually shared between two parties who have an existing relationship and is typically shared in exchange for a service or other value. This data is useful if the target of both are the data giver and the receiver are the same with similar demographics, both the organization running a joint promotion campaign and both the campaigns have a business partnership or a relationship. So second party data is ideally supposed to be shared only with sister companies, but you would see a lot of now it has been minimized where we talk about the selling of data and all of that. So basically the organization that has collected the data would give it to another organization. Now this will only help me if my targeted demographic is the same. That means, suppose a technology company gives data to a retail company, maybe for a clothing or a luxury brand. So then it will not make sense, because now my targeted audience completely changes, where one end I'm talking about technology, the other end I'm talking about luxury items. So it's very important that the targeted audience for a second party data between the data receiver and the giver should be the same. Or if I'm both the organizations are running a joint promotion, so there's a collaboration and we are running a promotion campaign, then you would want to, so both then, in that case, both the data giver and the receiver will need to merge their data so that both can run the campaign. And lastly, have a business partnership or a relationship. Again, but then still the first two conditions, either one need to be matched. Then we have third party data, which is data collected by outside agency and rented and sold to an organization that could have connection to the for marketing and purposes. So you have a lot of agencies that collect data for market survey purchases, and there is a huge amount of data. Again, the problem with that data is, with the third party data, is when you're part of these, so these are these panel companies that are mainly run in the US, where people sign up and be a part of the panel and they're paid for if they complete a survey. So now what is going to happen when you use the third party data, you're not sure whether it meets your targeting requirements exactly or not, and you're not even sure how valuable are the results since they are from a third party altogether. So third party data is collected in large volumes and can provide information about users similar to the data receiving company. Since it is not collected from the company's customer or reliable second party source, it must be used with caution, often used to target and be collected from various sources, including online surveys and public records. Let's talk about the fourth type of data, which is basically the zero party data. So data is when I opt in into a survey, or if I give my data for exchange in value, then that becomes a zero party data, where it is proactively shared by me as a customer with companies in exchange for some value. So quizzes, your social media posts, when you just randomly go to these malls and you fill up the forms, that's when you have a zero party data. So it can be used to personalize and enhance the customer experience. Example of data types that we have, so your email addresses, your phone numbers, your website engagement metrics, purchase history, demographics, customer feedback, social media engagement, referral data, product usage data from my app, location data, all of this becomes first party data. Then, because they are directly got from the customer. Website generated content, social media posts, generated aggregated reviews, location data, purchasing transaction, demographic data, third party advertising data, loyalty program data, retailers inventory, online search trends, they become second party data. Third party are online retail data, weather data, social media data, location, demographic, audience segmentation, financial, mobile app usage, advertising, marketplace, all become third party. And finally, zero party is social media posts, website analytics, search engine queries, user survey responses, customer support tickets, browser cookies, zero streaming, payment transactions, or GPS location. Because if you remember, for GPS location, you say allow, don't allow. So this become zero party data. How do I use it? So if we compare it, customer intentionally provides self-reported, first party company collects, second party another business first party data to use with permission, and aggregated information strung together from public and non-public sources. So direct relationship, not shared, is zero party. Direct and shared, so zero party and first party is direct relationship, not shared, and indirect and shared. Individual data volume, consented, high accuracy, again you get it with zero party data and first party data, because they are directly from the customer, while second party and third party consent varies, high volume and low accuracy. Product preferences, purchase history, fashion brand purchase sold at a CC company, and purchase from sites from across the web or for data aggregation webs companies. Data sources, primary data, survey, A-B test, organic data interaction, paid advertising interaction, focus groups and observations, secondary data, government data, market research reports, social media, internal company data and third party providers. Internal sources, CRM, website analytics, marketing software, email marketing software, social media analysis, customer service and feedback. External sources are third-party databases, market research reports, social media listening tools, publicly available data and competitive intelligence or online ad platforms. Where can I apply? We've almost discussed all the places where we can apply. Product intelligence, customer trends and preferences, product development trends, customer support, messaging and media, competition, direct future results, customer level insights, timely insights, customer segmentation. Then we have targeting marketing campaigns, we have CLV, we have campaign performance measurement, marketing mix optimization, and pricing promotion optimization, social media analytics. So there is practically no place in marketing that is left from marketing analytics. So that brings us to the end of the chapter. And we just have the last challenges and limitations that we have: quantity, quality, attribution models, lack of data scientists, data normalization and integration, privacy, compliance and ethical considerations, which we've spoken about some time back, interpretation and actionability, dynamic and evolving landscape, forecasting accuracy and complexity cost. And finally, thank you.